then we realized after a while it wasn't just hard work. It actually really was hard. Not only just the emotional roller coaster of it, but you're getting people to invest on you. You don't have a portfolio yet.
My name is Esprit Devora, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. I call it actionable empowerment. Every single episode, you'll hear the story of a fantastic woman in tech, from engineers to founders to investors to journalists to designers, all sorts of different females in tech who have thrived. I want to share their stories with you so that you can know what resources, mentors, and life situations they accessed in order to get to where they are today. Enjoy. Welcome back to the Women in Tech podcast, where we celebrate women in tech around the world. And today I am in Austin, Texas, one of my favorite cities in the States. Not exaggerating. I can't get enough. I'm already feeling the woes of the day that I have to leave. And today I get to celebrate Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, happy to be here.
Told you I get loud. Sarah and I were between it, leaving the door open and closed. I'm like, oh, I'm a little worried. I'm going to disturb people outside. So, Sarah, go ahead, introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
So I'm Sarah Brand. I'm the founding general partner of a venture capital firm here in Austin called True Wealth Ventures. We invest in early stage companies, usually seed stage, S-E-E-D. And we invest in companies with at least one woman on the founding team or on the executive, you know, high level management team. And we're investing in the markets of what we're calling sustainable consumer and consumer health. So women led companies that are improving environmental and human health.
And do you go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say we are really proactive in terms of Texas investing because there's no other VC fund that's specifically focused with a gender lens in all of Texas. But we're really looking across the entire country.
That's exactly what I was about to ask you. Are you only investing in companies here?
No, we're just really proactive here since nobody else is focused in this sector. So we're, you know, always judging business plan competitions, coming to co-working spaces like this, et cetera, in Houston, the major metros, Houston, yes. Dallas, San Antonio, Austin.
And she said co-working spaces like this right now. We're in this awesome space who's been incredible to lend us space to celebrate all these women in tech of Austin. You know, we've connected. I talked to my teammate today, Janice, with over 128 women.
Wow.
Like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And so we're in an Impact Hub. So huge thank you to Impact Hub. I love the community here. So go ahead, Sarah. Tell me, how did you go from being a little girl exploring technology to becoming a venture capitalist? When did it start? Did you have tech in your house? Were your parents in the tech field? When was that first trigger? Was it when you were a child or was it later in life where you're like, oh, this is an industry I want to pursue?
So when I went back to my high school reunion recently, I won't tell you which one. It was so funny to meet these people who were not meet these people, see my friends, see my old friends who that were just not my best friends that I keep in contact with, but people that I knew well in high school, but just had lost contact with, and they were introducing me to their spouses and saying, "This is the girl I told you about who was like explaining how rockets worked or airplanes worked or." And so I had no self-image of myself being that technical or, you know, back then. But my dad was a mechanical engineer. And so I think that's what started it most. I'm a mechanical engineer. That's what I studied for my bachelor's and master's and PhD. And I've found that women in mechanical engineering specifically almost always have dads who are mechanical engineers. So I think just growing up, he would always explain how things were made or how things worked. And so I wanted to explore more of that. I think that's what started it.
Yeah.
But then I recently – so my – quick on my background – very male dominated, and with 3 degrees in mechanical engineering, yeah. I was usually the only woman that, you know, had the bathroom to herself. And then went into the semiconductor electronics industry for 20-ish years, more technical roles originally,
right.
like Intel and Applied Materials and companies like that. Then I switched gears, went into strategic management consulting, then venture capital, and really knew I wanted to do venture capital long term because of the great blend of using my technical background to meet with entrepreneurs and think yeah. about the next solution, but also use more of that management consulting background to help them with whatever problems they needed to solve business-wise.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to go get more operational experience to be a better venture capitalist, not be the, you know, PhD who went into management consulting and then is going to tell you how to run your company,
right.
but really more hands-on experience first. So went into industry and did a bunch of operational roles and a lot of M&A. I can get into that more. But that's where I was when I knew I wanted to get back into venture capital. But towards the end of my tenure at literally over 10 years at this company,
right.
Fortune 500 tech company, I was asked to be the executive sponsor of the Global Women's Forum there because I was the only woman who was a vice president who had any technical or operational experience.
Wow.
So that's when my eyes were open to the fact
wow.
that was the case.
And you know what? I was just thinking, people ask me often, what's the one common thing that after having interviewed hundreds of women around the world, what's that one common thing that they all have in common? Normally I say, which is true, that a lot of us don't feel we're enough. It doesn't matter at any level, internship or CEO of a multi-gazillion dollar company. It's just, it's a very strange thing to have in common. However, I don't think about, a lot of us have had fathers in technology. Like my dad was in tech and got me my first video game set and got home office with a computer. And it's very rare that I hear about a mom in tech. And I think that was because that was that time
right.
or something. And maybe now moving forward, there will be more stories of mom in tech. And mm-hmm. so I receive it as like a parent in tech. But it's interesting. It's a lot of times it's the dad.
Yeah.
With the
yeah.
interviews I've done.
Yeah. And then when I was I can tell you more about, you know, how I decided to become this, you know, found this VC fund.
Yeah.
But I did a lot of self-reflection on what did I like to do when I was little?
Yeah.
Because I hadn't thought about that. And I found that I read lots of kind of sci-fi books,
yeah.
like Einstein or physics, and that like that's what I would do in my free time as
yeah.
a natural. And I don't know if it was probably influenced from just thinking mechanically or thinking, you know,
right.
like an engineer. But
yeah.
but this is before I went to college.
So. Why? I mean, your main MO to become a VC was essentially you wanted to bring your professional knowledge to help people, like is what would you say that's pretty accurate?
To help people scale that have really impactful businesses.
And but like why in this way? Because being a venture capitalist, especially that it's your fund, it wasn't easy to mm-hmm. raise. So, I mean, why this way? And then if you could walk us through your journey. Because it's a very difficult journey to start a new fund.
Mm-hmm.
And how you were able to accomplish the beginnings of it.
Yeah. So first, I knew in general I wanted to get back into VC. I didn't think about starting my own fund for a while. It was I just want to be in this role because I love the blend of
right.
the technical and the business. And I also, when I was getting my PhD, looking at what I was going to do, I realized I didn't want to put all my eggs in one basket.
Right.
Like, I was looking at developing a polymer that could be recyclable, for instance. And I thought,
right.
if that doesn't work, then I've spent, you know, a decade of my life
yeah.
and it doesn't work. So I really wanted to be in venture capital also so I could help many awesome technologies, many great companies
right.
at once. And so I knew in general I wanted to do that. But then as I got closer to actually, you know, taking that leap back
right.
into VC after getting enough operational experience, I was asked to be the executive sponsor of the Global Women's Forum
yeah.
because I was the only woman who was a VP that had operational tech experience.
Oh, interesting.
And so that's when I started, well, I was really upset at myself that I hadn't even realized that
yeah.
and realized because I'd been in mechanical engineering and semiconductors
yeah.
and venture capital and my husband and I started a brewery here about, I don't know, 10 years ago now.
Nice. I got to taste that beer.
Yeah. And we've got one woman finally there, but
yeah.
it's been all pretty much, you know, bearded
yeah.
men. And so I just was so used to being in all male environments that I hadn't even realized.
Yeah.
And so started really getting interested in why I hadn't realized that. And then also, what are the advantages of having more women in business? Is there even any reason to focus on this?
Yeah.
Other than just being lonely in terms of having any girlfriends at work. And saw this significant financial outperformance of companies, whether they're Fortune 500 or venture capital backed startups that have more women in leadership positions. So then I started looking into the VC world a lot more in that space and saw that it was probably the worst numbers out there in terms of VC partners that are actually making investment decisions for women.
Right.
And then when there are more women decision makers, then the likelihood of investing in a woman founder or woman CEO goes up, you know, 2-3x. Whether they've got a gender diversity strategy or not. And then just the lack of women getting funding.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know those numbers, but it's still just ridiculous in terms of how few women are getting funded.
Okay, this is as like this is as political and controversial as we'll get because I don't like to steer it this way. However, I'm aware of the numbers. I personally don't focus on it because I focus on what is possible. Yeah. However, I do just wonder of those numbers. I find that as a culture, we don't ask for what we want enough. Mm-hmm. And I just think there's really fundamental things that we can do to put ourselves out there more, to take more risks, to ask for more. And I know that's not like it's not a blanket solution because there are really uncool things that happen.
Yeah.
However, I would love it. Like, that's the reason why I created this podcast. I want us as a community to feel more empowered and go after what we want more, ask for more, become more resilient, more perseverant, not take no for an answer.
Absolutely.
Do you think I'm being completely utopian?
No. In fact, the reason there's a number of reasons why I started the funds, but one of the reasons was because in corporate America, I was seeing that it was going to take a long time to move the needle, way longer than I had the patience for.
Right.
There's just a lot of unconscious bias in the system, and it takes a long time to turn over the C-suite, you know, with a pipeline or the board. And so I realized by going into venture capital, you can invest in fantastic women right away, create successful exits and role models, and bypass that entire thing.
Totally. I mean, like it's a compounding effect. The more work that we do to create a positive, productive, forward-moving atmosphere for women in tech, the more women in tech will be and will compound and compound and compound. And
And the other thing is that this is kind of unheard of in terms of VC funds, that over 80% of our investors in the fund are women.
Oh, nice.
And that's never happened before. Yeah. And that wasn't our plan. That wasn't our expectation.
Yeah.
But in terms of the compounding effect, I now believe that it's women investors who are going to invest women who are going to be the impetus to this.
And I think sometimes it has a lot to do with like one of my girlfriends has this amazing company. I'm just going to say what it is. Nail Snaps, right? And she has to meet with investors all the time. And sorry, Angel, if this is TMI, I really don't think it is. A lot of the guys that she's, you know, pitching to, and she pitches to both men and to women, but the guys don't understand it until their wives.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it can be something as simple that if women are creating innovation for women, but then the people who are investing are men and they don't understand what it's like to do your nails or to have your period or like, of course, you're not going to invest in something you don't understand.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why I thought it was so important is because you can bypass this corporate, you know, thing, engine, whatever, that's going to just take a long time to turn.
Yeah.
And create these needed solutions. I think they're more impactful solutions, actually, when I look at women entrepreneurs and what they're solving for, which tend to be real needs that they see in their families and their lives, et cetera, which tend to be more drivers for improving environmental and human health. There's a lot of reasons, you know, that it's such a positive thing for the world.
I think jumping back into why I love doing this show, let's talk about your story on building this fund. I mean, that's just insane. First of all, where do you start? What's day one look like? Day where you're one. Like, I'd like to have a fund. Then what?
Lots of modeling first, lots of reading, lots of looking at other funds. And there's, you know, a lot of math in terms of the SEC has a limit of you can only have 99 accredited investors in a fund. And so if you want to get to 20 million, that means, you know, you have to have a minimum investment size for investors. You can't just, you know, let all your friends in for $10,000. You have to have a pretty good you know, minimum. So that's one dynamic. And then the other is, you know, how many companies do you want in your portfolio? What are the valuations? What are the size investment chunks you can make? How much follow-on investing? So there's lots of modeling, lots of thinking about, given the markets you're investing in, what are the valuations and the exit timelines, et cetera. So that was day one through, you know, that's probably 6 months really of talking to tons of people and finding the right model. And getting the story and the pitch together. And during that time frame, I also was talking a lot with Carrie Rupp, who is my partner. And she was the former CEO of Dream Adventures and had raised a $20 million fund to go along this, you know, incubator.
Love it. So she had the experience.
Yeah, exactly. And so she came on as more of an advisor, and she had just started Dream at Athena, the first woman entrepreneur focused kind of bolt on to in a top 10 accelerator.
Right.
And she really appreciated the opportunity, I'd say, because of her experience working with these women entrepreneurs, seeing these really great entrepreneurs that were told by male investors, sorry, we don't invest in women and things like that, and just saw, wow, these are great businesses, great leaders. And so by the time I actually started fundraising, she came on.
And so did you have a network to reach out to, or did she, or was it a combination of the two? Did you just knock on doors, door to door in Austin? Hey,
you know,
want to invest like a few million?
More of the latter. We, you know, talking about, you know, women don't ask for what they want as much. We didn't go to friends and family. Like at all. We really were looking at, okay, who is the right type of investor who invests in VC funds, who we think would resonate with this investment strategy? And so we talked to those folks a lot and never actually ended up talking to friends and family.
Yeah.
Friends and family who invested said, hey, can I invest?
Yeah.
And we're like, yeah, if you want to. And so it's just a different style, I think, than when I talked to other VCs that started their fund. They kind of asked everybody, you know.
Yeah.
But we really took because of also SEC guidelines that you can't market to non-accredited investors, you have to be super careful of never having anything out there that says, hey, we're fundraising. And so it was lots of coffee by coffee by coffee.
What makes True Wealth different than all the other funds that exist there? What you invest in, that's, but I mean just the culture of True Wealth. What makes it different? How do you support the entrepreneurs?
We usually, well, we're investing pretty early stage, and we like to take a board seat. And so we're really hands on. We help them with as much as we, you know, really can, and as much as we can be helpful. Yeah. So that ends up being lots of fundraising, but also hiring, operational things, you know.
Hiring so hard.
Yeah.
And firing is so hard.
Yeah. Maybe harder, actually.
Yeah. What's that whole saying? I keep thinking about it lately, like hire slow, fire fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I hire fast, fire slow, which is like, I don't know.
Opposite of,
I'm just such a loyalist and compassionate, and I like, Anyway, it's another story for another day. Can you share with us a little bit about your portfolio companies?
Sure. We've got three right now. So our first investment was in Unaliware. It's a company based in Austin, Texas. They're making a smartwatch for seniors. And the CEO has an amazing story. I don't know if you're going to get a chance to talk to her, Jean Ann Booth, but she sold her last company to Texas Instruments and her company before that to Apple.
Wow.
And then she came out of retirement to build this for her mom because her mom needed something and didn't want to wear the I've fallen and I can't get up button around the, you know, the lanyard from 1985. And so she basically designed this watch for her mom, realizing there was such a huge opportunity where technology has not kept up with this industry of personal emergency response systems, wherever the button has not kept up with technology, is not using modern technology in this market space. So it's a perfect example of women are making, daughters and daughters-in-law are making most of the decisions for aging parents and parents-in-law. And so a lot of the traditional VCs don't have the insight into why this is such a need. So that's one. Second investment is in BrainCheck. It's a company based in Houston, also a woman CEO, Yael Katz, and two founders, Yael and David Eagleman, both neuroscientists. And they've basically taken cognitive health assessments and digitized them. So you can take, you can get access to your brain health on your phone, your laptop, whatever, in about 10 minutes. And so they're really going after dementia, actually, and memory. As their big target market. So that's, again, tremendous one in terms of most Alzheimer's patients and caregivers are women. And most, even like sports-related injuries and concussions, women athletes are 1.5 times more likely to get a concussion and don't recover as well. Yet when you look at all brain research in general, it's been on male brains to date. So even though this is not a women's issue, not a women's health issue, it's really amazing what a woman CEO brings to the table in terms of the insights. And you had additional applications.
And you had one more?
Yes. And then Dermala is our third investment. That one's based in San Diego. And it's using the microbiome as a natural approach to skin disease and skin issues. Acne is their first big target market, then eczema, then skin infections. But they're using probiotics orally and prebiotics on the face to basically attack the bad bacteria with stable, well, it's too much to get into, but they're using a natural, very science-based approach to solve these skin disease issues.
What's like a huge obstacle that you've successfully overcome, and what did you learn from it?
Well, I think actually fundraising was a huge obstacle. And, my prior VC experience, I just joined a firm that already had a $120 million fund. And I just got to focus on the investing part.
Right.
But really having to raise that money, I think really was a huge challenge. At first we thought, and we were told, a lot of people are like, oh, you can't even do it. It's just impossible, basically.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I didn't look at these numbers until later, but less than 10% of the funds that ever go out to fundraise end up closing. And then of that, like less than 10%, over 70% don't close at nearly what they, went out to do in the first place. So at first, we just thought it was going to be hard work because we were going, coffee by coffee, and then getting suggestions of other people to talk to. And it was just super inefficient. I couldn't – my world before in corporate America was like every 30 minutes I knew exactly what it was. And now like, oh, my God, how long is this coffee going to be? And like, is it going to go anywhere? It was just so different, so inefficient. But then we realized after a while it wasn't just hard work. It actually really was hard. Not only just the emotional roller coaster of it, but of just – you're getting people to invest on you. You don't have a portfolio yet.
Right.
And so many professional investors can't even invest in a first-time fund because of, they're not investing their own money. They're investing on behalf of others. And so that has to have a certain risk profile or, track record and that kind of thing. So finding the right people and, having the right story and being persistent, it's actually really hard.
If you're comfortable, how many people did you reach out to? What I'm getting at is how many people said no and you kept going?
The vast majority, for sure. So I don't know how many that is. We never looked at those numbers.
Is it over 100?
Oh, God. It's like thousands, actually.
Oh, thousands.
Well, over 1,000.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
So you got told no over 1,000 times.
Well, let's see. I mean, we probably met with about 1,000 people,
That's insane.
Yeah.
You could start a little city.
And a lot of the – yeah. I was just actually cleaning
over
up some business cards.
Over
like a drawer. And I was like, oh, my God. Like the meetings that I've gone
to. How long did that take to connect with 1,000 people? That's insane.
So this is from like September 1st, 2015 through the end of 17. So –
2 years.
Two plus.
Mm-hmm. And so wait, did it take 2 years then to form the fund itself because you had to close on everything?
Mm-hmm.
crazy. Mm-hmm. Where I was coming from was I know this female founder who pitched to, I think it was like over 150 investors and got told no before she found a very vital investor and her company moved forward. And I'm like, man, 150 like pitches like and crying on the floor. And you're like, oh, yeah. Cool, 100. Like, I got over 1,000. I'm like, wow.
And a lot of those are connections to other people or, you know.
No, but still, it doesn't matter about the connection. It's still to be told no so many times.
Well, those weren't all no's.
Oh, it was more
You know, to understand the industry or to get connected to somebody else or that kind of thing.
Can we talk for a second about coffee meetings? Because, like, I just tweeted, I would choose spontaneous adventure over a day, any day over a scheduled coffee meeting.
Yeah.
I don't know. Here's where I'm going. I run We Are LA Tech. There's thousands and thousands of people in Los Angeles that request a piece of my time. Right. It is literally as loving and caring as I, it is not physically possible to have a coffee meeting with every last person that thinks it's no big deal.
Yeah.
Having run We Are LA Tech now since 2012, so 6 years, I need to have boundaries because I've gotten sick and everything. So I do this community day, whatever. But I keep thinking about just coffee meetings. Like, when is this is my question. When is a coffee meeting worth our time? When is a coffee meeting – when is saying no to a coffee meeting being an asshole? Like, you know, I just – what is this coffee meeting thing?
I – struggle with this all the time. It is so horrible, actually, because you're right. And I cannot be successful if I even take half of the coffee meetings that are requested, you know?
No.
So when we were fundraising, we would do whatever we needed to. But it was really hard because it's like, you know, oh, I know this great woman. You should meet her.
Yeah.
Like, no, I don't want to just meet a great woman. Like,
I
have been limited time. But it's really hard when you don't know, is this person – because a lot of the high net worth individuals, family office individuals, they're more behind a veil. So you have no idea.
Right.
And so you kind of need to take the coffee meeting to see if it – you know, if that's why the person introduced you to that person.
Yeah.
And so that is a mess, and I don't – know how to, you know, filter very well. But now what we do is we have 30-minute deal screening slots where if you know, if somebody could potentially be a fit for our fund, we have a venture fellow from the UT McCombs, you know, school that kind of filters the deals for us.
We interviewed someone from UT McCombs.
Really?
Oh, cool. Yeah.
We are very big fans of our venture fellow. Anyway, they'll help us screen the deals, and then we'll have very efficient meetings to just dig in a little bit deeper. And then if we know that a company isn't a fit, but it's somebody who's, you know, local, who's in our world that we really want to help, then we have entrepreneur meetings that are 30-minute slots back to back.
In person?
Sometimes in person. We'll try to line up the in-person ones, sometimes just over the phone because they're not in Austin or whatever. And at least bin them so we can, you know, dedicate a couple hours every other week or something to that kind of
stuff. In the beginning, I know this may sound funny, but in the beginning, when you first had coffee meetings, do you pay or does the person you're meeting with pay?
I paid because I was starting this thing. And so, or they might be investing. So I paid.
It's a funny question, but you know, when someone goes out to do their own adventure, especially as a woman and trying in this crazy age of what is our gender norms, you know?
Yeah.
It's very confusing.
Yeah. I definitely would try to pay.
And I think it's important. Like, I'm picturing like a fictitious, you know, founder in my head right now, like going out wanting to start this venture, and I'm thinking, have a budget for coffee meetings
for sure.
You know, like include that in your go to market strategy.
Yeah, and that's so. I mean, when you're asking somebody for their time, maybe if as a potential
I pay too,
investor,
by the way.
Yeah, I think you have to.
Yeah. So interesting. I think about this coffee meeting thing so often. Just because it breaks my heart when it's not logical for me to meet with all these people. And then, so for me, my solution that I created was community day. Once a month, I do a community day because I really like, I'm not a vetter. I'm a curator, but not a vetter. Like, nobody is not good enough for me to talk to. Like, that's just pompous and disgusting.
Yeah.
So I just want to be accessible to quote unquote everyone.
Yeah.
However, it needs to be within me still being healthy.
Right.
So I created a community day.
Job.
Yeah. I created a community day where like I schedule them 30-minute increments, like back to back all day long.
Oh,
It doesn't matter who you are, like, because my point is I want to be helpful for you. I'm not expecting anything in return.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could have your virtual coffee meeting and ask me whatever you need to ask me. And
cool.
I do it with Calendly. And so I just pick the day of the month that's comfortable for me. And then every single time I get one of those like coffee meeting requests, I'm like, and here's the community calendar.
Well, that's pretty much what we do with these entrepreneur slots.
Yeah. Speaking of tools, what is your favorite app or software or business tool?
I have at least favorites, but my favorite is probably Salesforce.
Oh,
when we were fundraising, that kept everything so organized, tied to our emails, because I use Outlook and my partner Carrie uses Gmail or, you know, Mac. So
interesting. Do you recommend Salesforce for a startup?
I don't know. I mean, like you were mentioning before, our fundraising process probably had to touch a lot more people because of the investment sizes and everything.
Right.
And plus, we were starting to fundraise for Fund 2, Fund 3. Like,
right.
So there's a lot of people we're meeting. Hopefully, they don't need that. I mean, maybe, actually. It was so helpful to keep everything organized. And for entrepreneurs that know they're going to have to raise another round, that it might be really helpful to keep all their contacts.
We use PipeDrive, but I'm just wondering if Salesforce is even I always pictured Salesforce as an enterprise tool.
Yeah,
that's what startled me,
Right. We use Salesforce IQ, which is the, you know,
the startup version. Where can people find out more about True Wealth?
On our website, it has the basics.
And can you spell it out for everybody?
TrueWealthVC.com. So TrueWealthVC, like Victor Charlie.
And are you on social too?
Yeah, we're on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter.
And where can people connect with you anywhere?
Well, we keep an events page on our website to really do the same kind of thing. It's not our own community day, but just where we're going to be coming up,
nice.
Either speaking or judging or attending, just so we can meet everybody, you know, in the different places that we're going
to
be at.
So you guys go to truewealth.vc and look for the events page. And you probably have mentorship sessions and stuff like that too, I imagine, right?
Yeah, not posted there. But if people contact us about an investment or, you know, they need help for something, then we can route them to those.
We do these things in LA, like speed dating, but for business, and that you sit around and you just get to ask any questions to seasoned people. It's pretty fun. What is your favorite book?
Well, the book that I used to actually figure out that I wanted to start this fund was called Centered Leadership. It's by Joanna Barsh, and she was a director at McKinsey & Company, which is where I worked for a while. And she did this book about actually women leaders and then realized it was applicable to all leaders. But she sent me the book, and I read it, and it was just at a really critical time while I was trying to figure out what it was exactly I was going to do next. And it's not an easy book to read. It's really doing lots of, you know, stop and reflect and write about this, or, you know, answer these questions to have your question and have a friend review
it.
It was the foundation of, you know, of starting this fund. So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And we'll include all that in the show notes. Our amazing teammate, Carl, listens to every last word that I speak. I'm sorry, Carl. And so he'll have it in the show notes for us. Sarah, thank you so much for hanging out with the Women in Tech podcast. Is there anything else that you feel like we left out that you want to share?
I would just say I'm on the board of the UT College of Engineering and also UC Berkeley's Mechanical Engineering School. And both of those schools have done a tremendous job of attracting more women into engineering. And the way they've done that is to show them the positive impacts of what they can do, which tend to be in the environmental or the health spaces. And I just see women entrepreneurs being on the front line of the world's most critical environmental and human health issues through their unique perspective. As you know, 85% of all consumer purchases, as 80% of all healthcare decision makers, etc. And so I just think it's so important for women to come into technology and to stay. You know, they show financial outperformance to companies, but they actually, more importantly, I think, show that they are creating solutions and coming up with solutions to some of the world's biggest challenges. So I really, really, really want more women to come and stay in technology.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Absolutely. And if you want to connect with more extraordinary women in tech around the world, remember you can go to the Women in Tech Facebook group at womenintechvip.com. Womenintechvip.com forwards you straight to the Facebook group, because I know so many of you are like, I don't know which one it is. So made it simple for you. Remember, you can say hello on socials at Women in Tech Show and get the Women in Tech sticker. And I will talk to you guys. See you guys, hear you guys in the next episode. Bye.
Hi, this is Sarah Brand, founding general partner of True Wealth Ventures, a VC firm based in Austin, Texas, investing in women leaders, improving environmental and human health. And you're listening to Women in Tech.
Impact Hub here in Austin, Texas has been our home. We want to give a huge thanks to making it possible for us to comfortably meet and interview several inspiring women in tech. They have the most collaborative workspace, incredible events, beautiful design, a hammock in their backyard. What? It's an incredible space. You have to check it out if you're in Austin. Thank you so much for being a part of the Women in Tech journey. Be sure to go to impacthubaustin.com to get your free day of co-working. I want to give a huge thanks to the team at SpyCloud. SpyCloud protects your employee and customer information from breaches and account takeovers. Try SpyCloud's early warning breach detection platform. SpyCloud made it possible for us to meet with several women in tech here in Austin, Texas, and I am so thankful that they have been part of the Women in Tech podcast journey. Get protected today by going to spycloud.com. That's SPYCLOUD.com.